Chloe, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I think it is a little bit serendipitous that today's conversation is about building your entourage so that you're focused on the fewest, most important things in the business that are going to drive growth and revenue and help you build a business and life that you love. And this is a really great example of why having an entourage is really helpful, right? I'm part of Stephanie's entourage. Allison is a part of Stephanie's entourage. So when things happen, you always have someone there to support you, right? When you have the right people around you, it allows you to take your hands off the wheel of the business and let other people help you drive it. So I say this is a really great example because I'm here driving the conversation today for the few of you who are here and everyone else is out on vacation, but it allows you to do things like step away from the business when you need to, whether that's for vacation or because you're having technical difficulties because you're in a major resort hotel and for some reason they don't have internet that's capable of handling this kind of thing. So that's really the focus of today's conversation is how do you get the right people and the right team in place, particularly on your individualized support. We're going to talk about the different components of an entourage, but really focusing in on the EA role and how that helps. And that's why Odalisa is here today, because she's actually going to share some of the things that she does with Stephanie that helps make Stephanie's life easier. What are the systems and processes that we've put in place around this role that allows you to create the structure that you need to be able to really do the things and focus. I think a lot of us really think of, the analogy that comes to mind is what happens when we go to a doctor's office, right? We don't get to see the doctor right away, right? First, we get triaged by the front desk. We have to go through, right? Someone else is weighing us and taking our vitals and then sitting in with us and getting a picture of what's going on. And it's only until we get to the meat of that work that we get to see the most critical person on that team. So those are the components that we're really going to talk about today is how to shift you out of being the day-to-day person who's in all of those roles to truly being the leader who's really that chief revenue officer, right? You're focused on growing and developing the business. And so this is what we like to talk about is right. You don't know what you know until you've been through it. So a lot of times when we think about life before having an EA, it's really about all of the different things that you have to do. You're wearing so many different hats in the organization, right? You're managing HR, you're managing marketing, you're managing clients, right? What are some of the things that you guys are managing that aren't your highest and best use? And it's no wonder you're overwhelmed because you have hundreds of tasks a day when you think about all the things that it takes to run a business. And quite frankly, you're the person who's getting all of that information. Without an EA, there's no one there to support you to triage that information. And so one of the things that we'll often tell ourselves is we don't have the time, we don't have the money, I can't find the right person. Like, I'm curious, what are some of your guys' perspectives on what's holding you back from taking the leap to building an entourage that truly supports you to let you focus on your highest activities? So I kind of want to hear from you, like, where are you sitting right now?
I don't mind joining in. I feel like for me, okay, so I've got this great team and I have this, I know exactly like my next process is moving in my current like one of our current admins to becoming a a servicing advisor. And I've been doing a lot of like networking with other people in the industry because she's licensed already and has been with our practice for 2 years, but like I don't have the time to train her, right? Like what I would call just basic Like there are things that I just do because I've been doing this for 18 years that I'm sure I don't even have to think through it because it's just so like just what I do. And so it's hard for me to teach that to somebody because I'm just not even thinking about it. So I'm like, there's got to be like a basic like financial advisor training program that's not a, hey, train to take this test and pass this exam or take a CFP course or whatever to become a CFP. Like, what are just some basic, you know, like what's out there? Because I feel like that helps move her into the role she wants to be in, which will help me find the next person to take her place. You know what I mean? Like to keep that ball moving forward where I can not do as much. Like I'm already not doing a lot, but as far as a capacity issue goes, like part of that is transitioning her to becoming a service advisor. So I just, I don't know. That's what's holding me back is like, is there something out there? And I got some good information from a woman I met. I had a Zoom meeting with today, so I'm going to check that out. She was like, actually, there's a company that does this. So we'll see. You know, that I'm willing to pay for it.
Yeah. I think part of what you're talking about is I don't have the time. So this conversation around entourage is how do we create leverage, right? One is making the time, right?
Yes, but I make the time by making her a servicing advisor. So I get that. But I want to make sure she has confidence to become a servicing advisor. So it's how do I do that?
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that. How do we put those systems and processes in place? But I think, Chris, you're also creating another focus and leverage, which is looking outside just yourself for creating those things. So whether that's your EA, a service advisor, a CSA on the team, it's how do we create that leverage for us? Because sometimes we will absolutely get in that cycle, which is in order to get the time, I have to have the person. But if I don't have the person and they're not there yet, then I don't have the time, right? And then you just sit in this cycle of I'm stuck and I can't quite get there. So that's really where we have to break those barriers around time and start figuring out what's the smallest piece that we can move that needle forward and really start leveraging. And so for you, it sounds like the first step is, I need someone to leverage training. What are the resources for that?
Right.
And we can share a couple of those. There's another training program that you can join that I'll share kind of after the call relative to the service advisor, but also just focusing on what are the other activities across your entourage. So that's really, when we talk about this entourage concept, we're really talking about three different kinds of leverage. So what you're talking about here is client leverage, right? How do I basically move out of the practitioner role in my business so that I can focus on the leadership role, so that I can drive the growth and development of the company and get out of the day-to-day of the client work or focus on the highest value client work, right? That revenue producing activity. But there's also business leverage. So depending on where you're at in the organization, right? That might be a business manager or a practice manager to help you run the business. So when we talk about this, it's not just thinking about one area where we can create that leverage. It's actually, how do we build this whole team around us, and at what stage do we bring those people in? So, right on the business leverage, right? If we have a practice manager and they're handling billing and operations and all of those components, right? That pulls that hat off of your plate. And if we outsource marketing, right? As you grow, right? You can get outsourced virtual assistant services, outsourced marketing services, right? All of that leverage gets scaled on the business side. But what we're really focusing on today is also that personal leverage. How do you create more personal leverage for yourself in a role like an executive assistant so that you can actually pull more of that $50 an hour work off of your plate so that you can focus in on these other business areas or even there create more time for training people in those other business areas? So I think that's one of the questions I would ask you, Chris, is what are you still doing that might be on the business side or the personal side that you can create that time and space to spend more time training on the advisory side? Does that make sense?
Can I could jump in. Mm-hmm. I, We have a virtual assistant that's more on like the operational side of things who does client paperwork. In the past, I had a assistant who was kind of like a marketing assistant and helped me with things like the newsletter and some blog posts and stuff like that. She has left, but I is still someone I know, and I has actually offered to like, oh, if you need any help, like especially this summer, like let me know. And so I am in contact with her. I trust her. She probably still has like a live email address, like, you know, at my company. So like, I don't know, like maybe if the some ideas on things, ways I could leverage her, if anyone has any, I would be open to that. But she's, you know, a young, capable person. She doesn't want to be a financial advisor. You know, she just basically just kind of like wants to work for me. So, or has some extra time right now and, you know, is available. It wouldn't necessarily be permanent or full time or anything like that, but I feel like there's an opportunity there, which I don't. That maybe this conversation will give me some ideas on how to take advantage of the opportunity.
Yeah, really, it's about where can we create the leverage across the organization. Brian, where are you guys at here?
Kind of in a unique spot, I'd say. I mean, I think for me, this is a good thing. I'll just, for lack of better words, too much time. So that kind of allows me to focus on, you know, a very narrow lane, which once we start our new company here in like 4 weeks, you know, I'll be able to focus primarily on business development and then some just other kind of longer term project stuff, like Chris mentioned, like advisor training, because we're gonna, you know, we're planning to grow and hire new people underneath us. So I'll be able to focus on that. We do only have one service, like CSA in the office right now, and they're pretty much always bogged down at capacity. And at times we can feel that kind of pressure on us. So we are in the process of either doing a virtual EA or just hiring kind of like a full-time CSA. And I think where we're at in that decision, like in the decision-making process, is everybody seems to be more comfortable just hiring somebody full time that's in the office to help with everything rather than work with kind of like a part-time virtual assistant. I think it's a little bit of an extreme way of thinking, but myself included, I know it's more expensive to do that, but I find a little bit of like peace in mind and just knowing that they're there and we can just lean on them whenever we need to. You know, 40 hours a week type of thing. And you have a little bit more control over their, I guess, like, again, to Chris's point, like what kind of prior training they may have had. Like if you're interviewing several people and you know what firms they worked at, you know whether they're going to kind of cut it right off the get-go or not. So that's kind of just where my head's at. We do have a need. That's just our thought process so far.
Yeah. Well, and go ahead.
I know for Sarah. So I was hired by Stephanie from a platform called Upwork, and one of the things, you know, she hired me specifically to be her EA, but I do have like this wide array of background skills. And so at one point she had asked me, she's like, hey, what else do you know to do? So I went ahead and I sent her like my resume and like a list of all the different things that I know how to do and all the different areas that I've worked in. So that way, you know, if she can leverage my skills in any other areas, she's able to. So I would recommend that if you haven't done so yet, you ask her for a resume or a list of other things that she feels comfortable doing, so that then you can see like, oh, well, this is probably an area that I need help and I could probably use her for that. Yeah.
Thanks.
I think that's a critical component that we're going to talk about, which is what's that role of your personal assistant? So Ryan, as you think about, is it a CSA slash EA, right? We see that a lot in our industry, right? Because we might not have full capacity for an EA, but we have CSA work and there's kind of correlation between those responsibilities. Or Sarah, to your point, like I know I need leverage and support. Chris, for you, it's looking at what are the things that I can let go of that may give me more time and space on the advisory side to leverage. And so as we think about the role that Lisa's playing in the business or that Jenny played for me, is really, right, she's that boundary keeper. She's the person that's triaging everything for you and keeping you from that external world. When you think about email as a great example, it's the only place where someone has complete and undeniable access to you without your permission. As long as I have your email address, I can get your time and attention. And that's open and available to the entire world. And so part of that function and role of that key assistant is creating that space and that boundary for you. In the email from office hours, we kind of talked about this, is that's the person who helps you hold your boundaries. Because it's hard for us to say no to the client who calls in. It's hard for us to say no to the person on the outside who wants to spend time with us. And so we really talk about this concept of accessible versus available. When I'm accessible, I'm here and here's how I can help, but it's on my terms. And that's where Lisa steps in, right? Stephanie's time is completely, right? There's always someone asking for it. If it's me, it's Allison, it's one of the people in the coaching program, it's outside business partners, right? Everyone's trying to suck up that time. Lisa's job is really to identify all of that stuff that's coming in and say, hey, here's what's important. Here's what gets past the gate. I get to be the gatekeeper. So, right, if I'm available, I'm here, I'm at your disposal. You can access me at any point in time that you want. And so that's allowing us to create a structure. So think about it. It's the distinction between being your own chef and making your own food, which is, you know, I'm probably going to eat the cheeseburger and French fries when I shouldn't, versus having a personal chef, right? I show up. The food shows up on my plate. It's yummy. It's delicious. It's all the things that I want. It's healthy. It's good for me. It's going to help me grow and develop better. So think of that role as the role for the business is really focusing you on the things that you really need to be spending your time on. Leanna, how's it going in your business and your role?
So things are going pretty good. We have been, of course, planning out our transition. Our dates keep getting moved back because of our build out. But we're moving forward. Our website is pretty much all developed. I think Travis and I have been working hard on roles, responsibilities, where our current assistant fits into everything. And I think we're pretty comfortable with how we're going to be moving forward. And then once we're settled, we'll determine whether we're going to need an additional person, whether that's a part-time kind of to help with marketing and some of those other items, or whether it's a full customer service person.
Do you all feel like you have the leverage that you need here, or do you see the benefit of having someone who's going to be that gatekeeper for you, or like where you've seen success or where you've struggled?
Yeah, so one of the things we're doing, the way our new tech is being set up, is we're going to be able to implement the one email. So kind of all client emails will come into one email address that all three of us can see it, but Alexis will be the gatekeeper to it. So then once she goes in and reviews all like client emails, she'll then assign them per se, whether it's something I need to deal with or Travis does. And then we'll have separate emails for people when they're coming in from the website. So prospects will come into another email address, and the same for vendors. So we'll have a separate email address for vendors to email into. So we're kind of going to segregate it that way to hopefully make it a little easier to weed out stuff that we don't need to be seeing.
Yeah. Triaging
those. That's how we're dealing with it.
Yeah. Triaging those non-priority items and kind of taking. Mm-hmm. Lisa, can you talk a little bit about what you're doing there for Steph as the gatekeeper and how that's allowing her to kind of focus her time so we can get kind of a tactical perspective of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So in what I do for Stephanie is I manage her inbox. We have like several ways that we communicate. So we have just some rules in place. She's already set up and I was able to come in. She showed me the rules and now we can live by those rules. So she has like a process for her inbox. She has a process for communicating through Asana, which is like the main platform for, it's essentially our CRM. And so I utilize those tools to make sure that I'm guarding her time as best as possible.
Yeah. And I think, Ryan, to your point, which we'll talk about a little bit, which is as we build out this entourage, what are the actual needs of the organization and how do we determine that? So I hear this conversation every time from advisors, right? I want someone in the office. I need someone sitting in the desk. I really need them to be here. It needs to be a full-time position. And what that often boils down to is I'm not going to do it, or I'm not going to do it now, right? So we push that hire out farther and farther because we're sort of waiting to get to the point where we have capacity for a full-time person versus bringing that in. So I want you all to think about if I could get back, Chris, if you could get back 5 hours of your week by leveraging an EA or a personal assistant, where could you spend that time?
I mean, I'd be out prospecting for advisors to join Valair and coming up with content for events, for my women's events I do.
And maybe spending time training that service advisor, right? Right. Creating that leverage.
I still don't think that's the best use of my time is training somebody. I feel like I can pay for that.
I can't argue with you can train technical expertise,
yeah,
but they can't train on the way that you do things.
Oh, sure.
Right. So that's the question. That is a leverage point, right? If you're not the best person to hire, manage, and train, think about your entourage. Who in your business is going to be the best person to do that hiring, managing, and training versus you kind of taking on that particular role. So I think that's that combination of what's external training resources, yeah, that we have versus what we need and how do we train on our systems and processes in the organization, because it's never quite the same from business to business.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I know we have our way and I don't mind training that. I'm looking for more resources on like just the basics, foundational knowledge.
I feel like our main, for what it's worth, I feel like our main training has just been like shadowing, you know, like having like the first, like the other person just like in the meeting. So it, you know, just sort of gradually becomes their job over time.
And she's been doing that. And I think
that's like, what I figured. She's probably been doing that for a year already.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, is that enough? Like, you know what I mean? Like out here in St. Louis, like Edward Jones is, you know, everywhere. And we all know like they have just a fantastic training program, right? Like anybody that goes through training at Edward Jones, like it's that's it. But then, you know, then the really good ones decide to go independent, right? So, but I'm like, oh, like, what is that? Like, why does everybody talk about their training program being so good? Like, and I'm not talking about like knocking on doors and making phone calls to build a business. Like there is some certain like foundational knowledge. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to make sure I'm not missing the basics by having her sit in on meetings that, I don't know, are too basic for me to even think to tell her. That's all.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of those questions, whether it's your service, your advisor, or your EA, which is how much control are you having over that relationship, right? Are you giving them enough room to swim, or are you still holding on to all of the reins? So when I think about the EA role as an example, where I often see it go sideways is if we don't have systems and structures and process in place, we never really let go, which means Lisa never really gets to do her job to its fullest. Where, you know, if I'm still in my email, checking my email and prioritizing my email ahead of my assistant, I might as well not have an assistant because I'm taking over that job for them. So whether it's your EA or your service advisor, it's making sure that you're letting them do the reps, right? Are they doing the work in advance of the call? Are you having them have that conversation in the meetings? And yes, leveraging outside training and resources is really helpful. But I also want to think about your role in this process, which is to be the leader, not the doer. And how can you kind of step out of the doing more frequently, whether it's checking your email or scheduling or preparing for a client meeting or doing the analysis, right? You then become the reviewer and the like, hey, until you're, you know, at level two, we're going to move from here, but really pushing them beyond that. And I think also making sure that you have the right people in the right seat. So if they've been in that role for a long time and they're shadowing and they're not taking on responsibility, right, what's the conversation to have there, which is like, what do they need to feel more comfortable and confident in their role? But I think about that's really deciding how do we create that leverage, right? Do we outsource and hire a part-time contractor, right? Even creating that 5 hours a week, Chris, if you could say, hey, if I could just get an assistant for 5 hours a week, I can focus on these other things. And then that creates more space for me. So I think we're also very hesitant to do virtual. We want to see people, particularly in this role, Ryan, where it's like, hey, this is my trusted confidant. Like, this is my partner, right? Like, this is the person who's going to hold my life in their hands. And I want to be able to kind of see and touch and feel them. And the distinction I can share with you is you're limiting your pool of capable, competent people by only looking in your area. So if you are in a very big metropolitan area and there's a lot of talent and a lot of resources, I would say absolutely just look at local. That's okay if it's something that you feel really, really strongly about. But if you're looking for 5 to 10 hours a week, if you want to open up your pool, like as an example, I just did two hiring projects for clients. One was local only. The other was fully remote. I had over 1,000 candidates for the fully remote position. We spent 6 months trying to find a local person. So the difference between a new person in 6 weeks and a new person in 6 months. Because the candidate pool between those things was extraordinarily different. So one of the things that if you're looking at hiring and leveraging, I would say is if you're absolutely set on local, Ryan, what are the real reasons that you need that? Because it's not that they need to sit in my office.
Yeah, I think it's just the need. I know we're talking about like EA executive assistant right now, but like our needs more like involved than that. It's more industry focused, like so CSA type stuff. So somebody that might come from like a working in a branch at like a Schwab or a Fidelity or is something like that. And I fully agree. It would be just a smaller candidate pool when you look local, but ideally that person would be there to, if they have to step in on a meeting, do a little bit more than just kind of like run my scheduling kind of day to day, more of like client related service work, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that comes back to how do we design the role, right, in the business that you have. So if you're looking at needing both an EA, CSA, right, you're combining two distinct skill sets and personalities, and then you really have to look at hiring the right person. So when you think about like that CSA work, it's routine, run the shop, right? Drive process. When you think about an EA role, it's help me spin all the plates in the business, right? What's happening over here? What's happening over here, right? All of those things and triaging and taking them off your plate. So just as you're doing that hiring process, really focus on what the role is and what the skills are as you build out that entourage. And then as you look to hire, if you do decide to do something like full-time and local, then look at the candidate pool that's coming in and don't hire the wrong person simply because you want local. So that's part of this conversation, is when we're finding the right person, we want to make sure that we're pulling all the right levers in front of that. And there's not a one size fits all, but making sure that you're really focused on what it is that you need to get the job done and finding the best person to fill that role. And so there's lots of options for that, and assessing how do we do that. And that really starts with figuring out where you want to spend your time and what that position is going to help you with. So you guys have seen this activity a lot, right? Aligning your time and energy, what's above the line for you, what's below the line for you, and then figuring out how do I delegate those tasks out, but also looking at how much time is it taking me, right? I don't think we're ever really realistic at how much time something takes. Like if you just track how much time you spend in email, you're going to realize that, oh, I'm spending an hour a day, 5 days a week at a minimum on something that I could have, right, someone else help triage and have me focus really on those activities. How many of you have gone through this exercise and gotten clarity around where you can create that leverage for yourself?
I have not.
Have not. Sarah, what about you? You had someone, you don't have them.
I've taken steps. I've like definitely some of the obvious things are off my plate. And you know, things like we have a group email, you know, it's kind of hard to get on my schedule unless you know me. I don't have it on the website anymore. And, you know, I've definitely done some of the obvious things, like we've got this virtual assistant, but, you know, I do think that, you know, there's still like another level that it could, you know, be more efficient. But sometimes, you know, things like a schedule, it almost seems more efficient to just do it myself. So I guess I'm in there too.
Yeah. I can see that, right? Because if you don't have, and we're going to talk a little bit more about like the systems and processes that we put around this kind of role, but if you don't have those in place, then that person's not learning to think the way that you think, right? So that's one of the number one jobs of this role, is really to be able to see what's coming in, review it, assess it, and prioritize it. So I think that distinction is, when we think of bringing in an assistant in, often we look at the role as being an administrative assistant, right? I do the filing, I prep the paperwork, I schedule meetings, I greet clients at the door. What we're talking about is a position that's leveraged above that, right? This person really is your right hand, pulling things off of your plate that don't need to be there. And so if we think about, hey, what are all the reasons that we don't do this? Why would we want to take the time to go through that exercise and look at the below the line activity, right? Because in the moment, when we're in the thick of it, we absolutely don't think about what the cost is. We tell ourselves like, hey, I'll just do that thing, or I'll just check my email, or I'll just schedule that call, like it'll be faster for me to do it. But if we think about the math behind the value of your time, right, if we're spending 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, it's 10 hours a week on below the line activity. If you think about, if I could spend 10 hours a week, to your point, Chris, on generating one new client, just probably around the amount of time it takes for you to do that. 48 weeks a year, that could be 48 new clients a year. If my average revenue per client is 7,000, that's $300,000 a year. If I take that times the lifetime value of the client over 20 years, we're talking millions of dollars. So maybe it's not 2 hours a day, maybe it's 1 hour a day, maybe the numbers are a little bit different for you, but that's the cost of you spending your time on $50 an hour work, is that you don't get to spend your time on $1,000 an hour work, the things that actually grow and drive the business. And I think what I can tell you is like, I'm in the middle of a staff transition. I moved from having just an EA ops person to bringing in someone who has a hybrid role. So right now, and Steph's been in this position before, I'm taking on that time and that responsibility. And now I can feel the pinch, right? Like, oh, I'm spending time on $50 an hour work when I could be spending it with clients and growing the business. So it's really about understanding what that leverage is and how do you get to that place. So to your point, Ryan, if you're looking at bringing in that person, how can they support both roles in the organization for you, or how do you create more leverage there? When we look at the role, we always talk about baselining compensation. So whether it's an administrative assistant, an EA, a service advisor, right? Getting a baseline for what compensation should be. How do I make sure I align compensation to the role? So these are just some examples of that. But I want to pause here and talk a little bit about what we call kind of the dynamic duo, right? You having a right hand that supports you, right? This is the Robin to you being the Batman, right? Someone who's taking out all of the other bad guys while you focus on the Joker, so to speak. Lisa, do you want to kind of talk about the dynamic between you and Steph, and based on like what you've heard everyone share, like what you're taking on or taking off of her plate relative to the context of this conversation?
Oops. Yes, absolutely. So I don't mind if you go to the next slide, because I'm probably going to touch on all this. So some of it may sound repetitive. So one of the things that has been super helpful is that she's already established a system. So she's got like these, an SDH, which is an SDH stands for Steph's Daily Huddle. So this is when both me and her get together every day for like 30 minutes to just go through really quick all the outstanding items. So this is everything that just kind of stays outstanding that I haven't been able to figure out on my own, or that I need a little bit more clarification, just need a little bit more to go on to take it to the final end, or if it's something that she would need to take care of. In addition to that, we have a whole standard operating procedure for how do we manage her inbox and processing all the emails. So in the beginning, it was a lot of shadowing, like one of you guys said. So at the beginning, I was shadowing a little bit of, you know, how she, what email she was looking at, what she needs to touch, what she doesn't need to touch. And then from there, again, we have these rules set in place on where does each email go. So there's going to be emails that I process myself. And then there's emails that she definitely needs to work on, and those I have a special inbox for her to review. So I'm cutting down her email from like, maybe she'll get, and I'm constantly in there. So we have this process where I'm processing emails 3 times a day, in the morning, afternoon, and then before the end of the day. And so, but I would say she's probably getting anywhere between 50 emails, and out of the 50 emails, and this is just a rough estimate, it varies by the day. But out of the 50 emails, probably 10 make it into her inbox that she actually needs to touch. And then the rest is things that I can take care of for her, saving her time in that regards. Then we use Asana too. So a lot of those emails that come in that do need that second step that needs to be processed in Asana, I carry those over there. And with all these systems that she has in place, it helps build accountability and just keeps an open line of communication, because through Asana, which is our CRM, essentially, I can communicate to her, like every time I add something in there, I can send her a message, say, hey, I added this, I processed this, same thing via email, and same thing during SDH as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and whether or not it's your EA or any of the roles, like having those systems and structures in place, here's how we communicate, here's how we train, here are the standards that we have. So if you think of CSA or the service advisor roles, it's what's our turnaround time? How do we respond to emails, Ryan? When you think about combining that role in an advisory practice, one of the things the CSA slash EA often does is triages all the non-advisory work off of your plate. Like Leanna was talking about, right? We have a centralized email and that person is that first line of defense in triaging. Hey, I need money movement, or I need time with Ryan, or Sarah, you know, can you meet with this wholesaler on Friday, right? We really don't want to be doing that work. So that position really pulls all the non-advisory work also off advisors' plates, whether it's just you or, right, you and your service advisors, right? And so by using your CRM workflows and processes, that's all a part of that training procedure, right? And it takes intention and time to get there. So that shadow training, but making sure that that's accountability system. We're putting this, I'm putting this in place for a firm because, you know, we love to say that, you know, advisors have shiny object syndrome most of the time, right? You have so many things to focus on in the business. We joke that Steph does that, right? She's always got a new idea or something else that she wants to be focusing on. Our job is really to keep her focused on those important things so that she can have space to do that new work. And so by having these structures in place, it allows us to sit down with them and say, okay, hey, you know, who's on first, what's on second, what's on third? How do I help move the balls along for you? How do I pull things away from you so that you have the time and energy to focus on those other things? But here's the hard part. You guys have to first sit down and figure out what you don't want to be spending your time on. Which means figuring out where that you can create that time to be able to put these kind of systems and processes and people in place. And so I think of the analogy around time or the mindset behind it is we always hear the, I don't have time, right? I don't have enough time to do X. But if I think of my kids as an example, if my kid comes to me and says, hey mom, can you play with me? And I'm in the middle of doing my work, my answer is going to be like, I'm really sorry, I'm busy, I don't have enough time. But if my kid comes to me and says, hey, my brother got hit by a car, I'm never going to say I don't have enough time. Right? So it's really not about not having the time. It's about not prioritizing that, right? Playing with you is not as big a priority as maybe, you know, helping my kid who's been injured. So we keep telling ourselves that we don't have enough time. But if you take that just a little bit time and create it, you're going to have what I call a time multiplier, which is if I take the time to train someone to do the work, I get back my time tenfold in results. I'm actually multiplying my time and the value of it. And so taking the time to put these things in place is a critical component of making that system really work for you. And so when we think about what are the places that we can spend it, right? Time is number one, right? Scheduling, prioritizing, helping you triage work. We're going to show you in a little bit, actually helping plan your work so that you just show up and do the work. So that you don't have to think about it, right? Not just scheduling your calls and your meetings, but what are the things that you need to work on? So that's something that Lisa does for Steph. Because we have a system and structure in place, she's able to do that, to say, hey, I'm going to put this in this block and I'm going to move this time for you. And then there's that work on the business stuff. What's the administrative work in the business that you can pass off to someone to create time and leverage for you to work in those other places? And I think this is really the hardest part, which is when you get to the point where you're stepping out of practitioner, where you're just doing the work or you're just running the business and you're stepping into the role of leader, right? Into the head of that entourage, you aren't a tactician specialist. Your role in the organization is to make sure that all of the plates are spinning and spinning well. And so having someone to support you in all of the administrative things that goes with that really allows you to make sure that you're focused on training, managing, and growing your team. So Lisa, I want you to talk a little bit about how this has gone for you and where you sort of see the next level, because I think that's always the hardest piece is where do we start in terms of letting go of this work? And then how do we get to the point where we truly have what I call a chief of staff role, right? We go from, hey, I have an admin who supports scheduling and administrative work to having an executive assistant who starts to truly triage and prioritize your life and really be the gatekeeper, to having a chief of staff who basically runs things with you so that you can focus on your highest value activities.
Yeah. So as great as it would be to have somebody come in and just take over your life when it comes to those little things that you probably don't want to be touching, it definitely helps to have boundaries and rules in place. And Steph has taken the time to create those. And so one thing that I found very helpful in working with Stephanie, I've never worked with anybody like her, and very unique, very militarized in her way of thinking, which is very helpful. And, you know, she has a system for everything. So how things go in Asana, how files get named, how does stuff get put in a schedule. And so in my short time, I've learned she operates this way because this is how you optimize. And every organization has that consistent excellence, has a standard process for it. So this is what we have in place, sort of. Not sort of, this is what we have in place. So these here are what she has in her calendar. So every time I need to schedule something. So first she has two schedules. One schedule is a grayed out schedule, is free. And this is her, I'm blanking out on the name, the model schedule. So she's already gone in and decided at the beginning of the year, okay, so this is how many time or hours I need to dedicate to XYZ. So she's already in there. So the gray part that you see here, that's what that is. So now I come in and if there's somebody that's trying to schedule a call, I already know when I can schedule that call for, because she's given me this guide. So then we have all these times. So if it's in red, it means she needs to be there. So if she has a call at 8 a.m, because it's usually not during her normal hours, which is 9 to 3, if I need to let her know, because her brain is already so programmed to run by this schedule that if I don't let her know, she's probably not going to look at it, because she usually does not have calls at 9 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock in the morning. So each of these things, it also helps minimize the time she spends looking at things. So if she was to look at her calendar really quick, if she sees something in blue and somebody's trying to schedule a call with her, she's going to say, oh, that means I'm not committed to being there, because red means that she's committed to being there to talk to that person. And blue means it's just another thing that she needs to take care of. So this has been detrimental in helping me schedule her day without me having to spend time to go back to her and say, hey, this person wants to meet with you. When can they meet with you? Because I already know based on this schedule or this roadmap.
Yeah. And so when we talk about creating systems and processes and how that creates scale and leverage for you, it's because we're shaving time off of everything that you do, right? So we're not thinking about scheduling as the leader anymore, right? When Jenny was doing this for me, right, we have a template model schedule. It's like, these are times for client calls. These are times for prospecting calls. This is when I'm doing my client work, right? For you guys, it would be, right, this is when I'm doing callbacks, right? I just work with an advisor. We didn't have time to call clients just to check in on his schedule. Right? It just didn't exist there, right? So if you haven't gone back and done like, here's my model schedule, right? And you've got someone in a support role, it also lets the rest of your team know like, hey, when is this person, again, going back to accessible versus available, you're not just creating boundaries for clients, but you're setting time with the team. So if it's, hey, I'm open from 9 a.m. to 9:30 for open office hours for the team. So if you're working on something and you need a process, it allows you to really kind of check in with those things and be accountable to your time and kind of hold discipline to that process, because then you're letting someone else come in and set boundaries, right? You, if you ask Jenny anytime that I did this, if someone asked me if they could have a call, I'd be like, well, I guess we can fit it in on Tuesday at 3 p.m. right before my kids' thing, right? But if I set the boundaries, or Lisa's setting the boundaries, right, she has that ability to say no. Saying no is one of the hardest things for most of us from a mindset perspective, right? It feels like we're restricting ourselves. And so by putting that kind of gatekeeper in place, it's giving ourselves that time and space back. And so, like, this is the example of the model schedule in practice, because how does someone else know how to set your time if they don't have a model to set it? So this allows Lisa to prioritize what's coming in for staff. And when there's more than can be done in a day, then she's sitting down in that daily huddle and saying, hey, you have 87 things on your to-do list. You only have time for 10. Here are the things that you've told me are a priority. How can I help you with that? So, right, there's a checklist for Lisa that says, okay, number one, we need to have a job description. So Ryan, as you think about that new hire, what's going on the job description, right? What are all the things that we really need that person to do? And are we bringing in some of that EA role, particularly if you're going to hire a full-time person, right? You might as well create a person who's going to get the leverage for you if you can, or consider how else to get that leverage. All right, making sure we have a job description. When you think about that EA role, it's okay, now what is their responsibilities on a daily, weekly, and monthly basis? And I think this is one of the rubber meets the road, is there's a distinction between what's on your job description and what I need you to do consistently in your role. So for that EA role, we have both of those. So Sarah, as you think about, hey, how can I use this person? What is it that I could have them do daily, weekly, monthly that's going to pull stuff off of my plate? And that kind of gives them that roadmap. And then having a consistent model for meeting with them and going over those priorities and getting access to you, right? What, how are they shadow training? What questions are they being able to ask? Because what essentially you're doing, kind of going from level one support to full-on chief of staff support, is you're teaching that person to think the way you think, right? Being your proxy, right? And so having all of these things in place, and the good news is we have samples. So that's a great starting point for how to get from point A to point B really, really quickly, and then customizing them to your firm. So we've talked a little bit about in the trenches so far, but how many of you really have someone that you're leveraging and meeting with regularly to pull administrative stuff off your plate? Are you doing it via email? Are you meeting with that person? Let's talk about, like, how do you actually get stuff off of your plate? How do you delegate? Sarah, how are you delegating?
I have a weekly team meeting. We use a lot of, like, pretty detailed workflows for client work, and we use Hubly and integrates with Wealthbox. So, like, a lot of that stuff is automated, but sometimes tasks come up for me that I then assign to somebody else. But as far as, like, email go, like, I'm definitely doing my own email, my own schedule. But, you know, I just definitely got some ideas, you know, from this conversation. I was just jotting down some things that that could be sent to somebody else. As far as client work, though, there's always two people assigned to any client household, and so it's always, like, kind of obvious who needs to take over. And so like on most client work, I'm CC'd, but I'm, not doing it.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because I often find that for advisors, like when they get the right CSA or service advisor in place, leveraging client work becomes pretty easy for them. But we still hold on to these other things. We still hold on to our email, to scheduling, the prioritization of our work. We hold on to HR, finance, billing, right? All of these things that really are below the line activity for most advisors. So I think I would encourage you, Sarah, to really kind of talk about and go through that list. Like, okay, I know how it works. Like if it works for your client work this way and it can be really effective when we put systems and processes in place around client work and client workflows and we see the leverage there, what would my life be like if I could gain it on the personal assistant side, right? What would my life be like if I could get rid of all of these lower level activities that are really eating up my time, email, scheduling, building a PowerPoint presentation for a speaking event, like any of those kinds of things that come up. And then what's interesting is that we don't usually have a model for how this works. We don't have a structure, right? We build workflows for client work, but when it comes to sort of the working on the business work, there's no model and structure in place. And then we wonder why the person that we brought into that position can't be successful, because there's no structure to support their growth and development. So that's part of all of these pieces as we look to bring in these roles, is how do we create a structure that creates a system of success? How can I delegate sort of that work product and all the details so that over time that person really can learn my work style and how I function and help me move the ball forward in all of the areas of the business? That's what's really unique about this position, is it covers kind of everything and is your right hand, so to speak. And that's really where, it's those little amounts of time, 2 minutes here, 3 minutes there, 5 minutes, right? If we start adding that up, and I think Lisa's point about Stephanie being militant about this is we're always looking for ways to shave time, right? How can we get things off of her plate and onto someone else's so that she can focus on the things that are really in her, unique ability and wheelhouse? But also because when we do that, it enables other people to grow. So if we keep holding on to everything, we're really limiting other people's growth and development because we're not giving them the opportunity to grow as well. So number one rule for success, and this is, I think, a good point, is that you need someone who fits your style, but also has the skills to do the job at its fullest. So I think a really good example I can give, you all know that I had Jenny on my team. She was my EA, my operations person. She was very good at that role. But what I needed was someone who had skills to triage and project manage client work as well. And so as much as I loved working with her and she was very good at a function of that job, right? She wasn't able to do the role at its fullest and highest best use. So I had to make a shift because it wasn't the right position to leverage me in the best way possible. So number one is you need to have someone who fits the whole of what you're trying to accomplish, which is getting down to that job description. And number two is they have to have the skills to do the job in its entirety. So it's more than just scheduling, it's prioritizing. And right, Steph will always say, right, in this position, your number one job is to think, right? A really great example is this: the best EAs become leaders in organizations. They don't stay administrative assistants. Michael's EA is now his managing director at kidsys.com. She's running the business on a day-to-day basis because in that role as EA, she learned about every aspect of the business, from HR to finance to building content. That's what Lisa's doing today, right? She's in content, she's in client work, she's in scheduling, she's really in every piece of the business. And as she grows, she's going to step into that over time and become kind of that full right hand. All right. Let's open it up for Q&A, and then we're going to do some breakouts. Are there any open-ended questions that we haven't answered about structure or process? I know we've kind of dived in and out of like the different components of the entourage, from the client side to the business side to the personal assistant EA side. So open to anything in there that you guys want to talk about. And if there aren't any more questions about structure or process or how Lisa's supporting Stephanie, like this is the open time. We'll drop into breakouts.
There's only three of us. I mean, I feel like we are a breakout.
that probably is the case. So we'll drop into this breakout.
Which, by the way, it's a group of females. Like, this doesn't happen a lot in our industry. So find out. That's exciting.
Does that mean I get to have the tough conversation? Is that we are the worst at letting go?
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely agree with that.
Because we're the best at getting
shit done. For me, what's hard is I started in the industry as an assistant for a year before, you know, just for whatever reason I had to do that before I broke out on my own. So I've always been this like kind of control freak of, you know, wanting to make sure that my I's are dotted, my T's are crossed. Not that I don't, you know, mess things up periodically, but I think the goal of my staff during our next transition is that I'm not going to know. That's their goal, how to do a lot of the stuff. So I'm going to have to rely on them to get stuff done. So that's their goal. So I can be focusing on new clients and all of that. So, but it is hard to let go.
What's the story there, Liana, about letting go, particularly as you've done all the jobs?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
What's the story there? When you say it's hard for me to let go, what has you holding on?
Well, I guess, yeah, I guess that's some of it, is that I feel that, you know, as I've tried to train, and it's more Alexis, and that when I'm asking her to get something done, it's like, she will only ask the basic question. Like, she doesn't have this mind that just wants to know that additional, like one question generally leads, the answer will lead to some additional questions. And so it's not just a straight, oh, go figure this out, because she just doesn't have the thought process to investigate it further. So then she'll come back to me with an answer, and I'll be like, well, what about in this, you know, this next part of it? And she's like, oh, I didn't think about that part. So she'll have to go back. And I don't know, we're not sure if it's right person, wrong job kind of thing. So that's what we have always struggled with. I'm the nice guy. I have a hard time kind of setting the rules and saying, hey, you're not getting your job done. What's going on? So we're gonna, you know, put a lot more things kind of on the plate that we're monitoring to make sure that we have the right person in the right seat for her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our challenge. So that's part of it. And part of it is just, you know, even when I get information, I always kind of second guess it. And a lot of times, you know, I will, you know, if we have a problem with an account getting a state or something settled, we had an IRA settlement that was going on, and she's like, oh, you know, back office said we can't do that. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure they can. So it took me to, you know, push, get it escalated up to a manager position to, yes, find out that, yes, it could be done. And she's not going to do that kind of stuff. She's not going to take the initiative to push things through. And so if I just took her word for it that yes, they said no, then a lot of, you know, and that doesn't happen that often, but it happens, you know, a couple times a year where, you know, you get a wrong answer and she's not gonna, and she's been with us for 8 years. It just seems like sometimes she doesn't retain some of that.
What do you guys
think? She's wonderful with the clients, you know, so she's.
So I'll chime in here. I'm still new working with Stephanie. We started working together back in February. I've always considered myself a very proactive person. Like I'm always taking initiative, always trying to figure it out before I go bug her. And that's how I've always worked. But after I started working with her, she has standards. She has a process in place. And what I love about it is like, she knows exactly what she wants. And because she knows exactly what she wants, she's like, there's been times where, you know, unfortunately I've forgotten certain steps and she'll outright ask me, she'll say, okay, I want you to take me to your thinking process. And I feel like that's helped me grow. So I don't know if you feel comfortable having that conversation with her. It doesn't put any blame on the person, but it gives you a little bit more perspective into how they're thinking about things. And I find it that that's very, it's constructive for me, because then I can talk to her through like why I did it this way, or, you know, what was I thinking? And then she can say, okay, well, I think that if you would have done X, Y, Z, you would have had better results or been more efficient. So I feel like that's a good way to grow without coming off like you're not doing your job correctly.
Mm-hmm. And Leanna, I know we talked about this in Jackson Hole a bit, and she's, you know, probably not the right fit, but I don't know if I mentioned this or not, like with my one of my team members, she's been with me over 10 years now, probably like 2 years into it. You know, she was just really good at doing exactly what I told her to do. And no more, no less. We're like a very fantastic order taker. And it was kind of like, okay, I know you're smarter than this. And what it looked for her, she actually just needed permission, right? Like I was like, listen, you're very good. You will do anything I tell you to do without question. Like you will do it. And I don't worry that it's going to get done. But you're allowed to think, like, you know what I mean? Like you're allowed to come up with solutions to do more than just like what I am asking of you. You're allowed to think through the next steps or like question the answer you got. Like I had to give her explicit permission to be more than an order taker. Mm-hmm. And like, it was night and day. And like, okay. I think it's 12 years later, she's with me.
Yeah, I think part of what you're pointing to, Chris, is that particularly I think in the admin kind of CSA or EA role, like we're so used to that role being a support position, an order taker, that they don't know how to step up and we don't know how to give them that permission, right? Because that even that profile has a tendency to sit in that space. So one of the things that I can tell you is once you start giving that permission to that person, then you can see if they step up or don't. Because if she hadn't stepped up, if you've explicitly said like, hey, you have 100% like full blow, make mistakes, that's okay. Like, here's the expectations that I want. So Leanna, you might say, hey, I know that this, I want you to do this thing. It's very hard to do. You might get pushed back. If you get pushed back, like you need to practice pushing back, escalating, right? Doesn't sound like she's learned how to escalate issues at a custodian, right? So some of it's just technical knowledge, but some of it is, I think these are soft skills. And so sometimes we're really good at training technical skill sets. How do you process paperwork? How do you enter data into the planning system? We're not always great leaders at training soft skills. How do you think strategically? How do you solve problems? Mm-hmm. How do you address conflict? Because it's a conversation about, we feel it's a conversation about who they are as a person. You're not good at X, that's going to make you feel bad. So I'm just not going to have that conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a really critical piece of this puzzle, which is you have to get really comfortable having uncomfortable conversations about people's growth.
No, that's true.
What else comes up for you guys, or anything else there? Are you ladies?
I have a couple. Well, one of that phrase, take me through your thought process on this. I wrote that down because I feel like that's useful. But I've shared about a person on my team who's a little like underutilized and has been doing trading, and that's taken a load off of me. But I was making this list of some operational tasks that, potentially for an EA, but actually like this other person could do some of these things. So anyway, it is removing some things from my plate. Things like proposals and billing and agreements, and there's a lot of stuff that that I am doing that would be better. My time would be better spent on, having coffee with a local attorney or whatever.
And
that's something that person couldn't do.
Stephanie has actually, we figured out a couple of emails that she usually sends, like for a prospect and things like that. And what we've started doing is building templates. So we had email one that would go out to like a prospect, email two, and we've already established you'll send that the next week. And then we have the next one, like the final one, and we'll send that X number of days out. And so now I can even take that. I've taken that off her plate, and I can now email clients because I have this template that I can use. And that's would be a suggestion for you. Like if you start having them do that, you could just give them some template emails that you're happy with, and then just have that taken care of. And then I update Stephanie through Asana, and I say, hey, we have this new prospect. They emailed us this day, this is their information, this was an inquiry, and I sent them the email on this day, and I already schedule out like the next two emails. So if I don't hear back, then I send the second email, and so forth.
Yeah. And I think it's really finding like where that stuff fits on your team, Sarah. So whether it's an EA or it's service work for an associate, like just it starts by putting the list together. And so I think that's the piece, which is that's our first point of resistance, is just sitting down and making a list of all the things that we do and where we want to spend our time and where we don't want to spend our time. So like you said, hey, I know at least three things, right? Billing, proposals, right? So what's your next action there? Where do you want to, like, okay, even if like those are three things, how can you move that needle forward instead of just sitting on it?
Well, I know I'm talking to the one person right after this call, so I'll ask her if she's got time. But the other person, actually, I'll send her a message and ask her if she was still, looking for some work this summer.
Okay. What about you, Chris? What comes up?
So I've done that above the line, below the line, which has been helpful because from that we came up with the service inbox and a centralized like phone and email address, which was huge because I spent way too much. Like everybody goes through me. Like they need me, they call me, they email me. So that's been huge. Now there's still a lot of clients that need to kind of like take hold of it. Like I'm still getting more than I'd like, but it's been better. I don't do any of my scheduling. Luckily with, at RFG, part of the platform fee that I pay for covers, like I don't do billing. I don't really pay for my events. Like I just get a lot of support, cause we pay for that. But there is still more handing off that I need to do from a client meeting preparation standpoint. Like I know that not to make excuses, but we're in the process of change. Like our sales force just got up, like not upgraded, but
yeah, they switched it out.
Yeah, they switched it to like the cloud base. So like it feels a little bit like we're relearning some of that. We now have nitrogen along with hidden levers. So we're trying to figure out which risk management to use. And then we're actually transitioning from MoneyGuide Pro to eMoney. So like there's a lot of technology changes happening right now. So it's hard to just tell somebody on the team, all right, here's the process and what to do, because I'm still figuring it out myself. Oh, and Orion took away some tools starting today that I've been using for 7 years. So I'm like, holy shit, like literally the processes I've been doing, like every single one just got changed on me, like in the last, like right now, like, you know what I mean? Like right now. And so like, I do know that that's kind of my next, like what I'm in the middle of working on is, all right, what are the processes? So that way, not only do I need to know them myself, but then I can train them and get that off my plate. So I'm not doing as much.
Got it. So you're really focused on, and like business happens, systems change, things change. So that's really where you're spending your time and energy. So you're in the build it phase so that I can create the leverage. What that's I would ask you is, where can my team support me in that in any way, shape, or form?
We are doing team trainings. We have our weekly huddles like Sarah has, where we're just talking about the business every week. So we're constantly communicating, but I've been scheduling like just our team trainings with each of these vendors specifically. So that way I can get their feedback on the process too. Like I want them hands on with it.
Yeah. And I think that you said something there that's really critical. It's come up a couple of times, and Lisa, you said it really well, which is understanding like your thought process. So I love systems and processes. I will tell you to use systems and processes all day long. When all else fails, the system will save you. But part of what you want to train your team to be able to do is think. And so that's a part of this systemization that you need to have is, how do I give my team the tools and the training to be able to function outside of this? So Lisa, a really great example of this is, someone needs to get in Stephanie's calendar outside of her schedule. Stephanie's not available. Lisa then has to figure out, okay, I have the guidelines, but at the end of the day, I can't know every nuanced, perfect way of being. I have to know, like, hey, is the meeting with Natalie important enough to break the boundaries?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's a key component of when we're looking at team members and growing development, is assessing what's their critical thinking skill set. Can they jump to that next level? And then where can we give them responsibilities to do that? How can we start to let those things go? And I think that's where a lot of us meet resistance, is letting go of thinking is hard, because it means letting go of some decision making as well. So what's your next step, Chris? If you're in the need of it and you've got to create some time and space, what are your clear, like, okay, here's what I got to do to get to the place I need to be?
Oh, just defining processes.
Okay. What process is going to create the most leverage for you?
The first one is the client review process. And then the second one is the onboarding new client process. And then the next one is a prospecting event follow-up process.
Yeah, which is great, because actually that's the order I recommend doing them in. Almost everyone wants to start at the beginning and work to the end, but 90% of your work is in the client review process. So that's really where I recommend starting if you don't have solid processes in place. But think about, like, what are the ways the team can help with that? So if we're having a team meeting and we're documenting it, maybe the team walks away with the first draft of the process based on your meeting, and then you can review it. Or the team walks away with the first draft of the email communication that goes with the process, right? Really finding anywhere you can create that leverage is going to create that time and space, but it's also going to help train the team to think independently of you. Like you said, like, I'm the funnel. So like, how can you really put yourself in the position of not being the funnel anymore?
Yeah.
Okay.
Awesome.
Anything else? You guys feeling good? Any other questions, thoughts, points of resistance?
I have a networking thing in 5 minutes. I'm going to hop early so I can use the bathroom and have a sip of water and be ready on time.
Sounds good.
This was good.
Have a great 4th of July, everyone. Thanks.